Thanks for being with us at Idaho Matters. I'm Tom Michael, filling in for Gemma Gaudette. The story of salmon is quintessential Idaho. Particularly for the native people of the state, salmon are essential for the Nez Perce tribe, as well as source of food, but also a soul-deep connection to their life cycle. But salmon are on the brink. Idaho Congressman Mike Simpson has made a bold proposal to save the species by getting rid of four dams on the Snake River that scientists say have severely cut their chances of survival. Today, we're going to go deep on the story of these controversial fish with a documentary from our partners at the BBC as told by Idaho-based journalist Heath Drusen. Let's take a listen.
That's all right, come on in.
Good to have you.
Couldn't leave without you.
Good to have you. This is great, almost a full house.
Woo-hoo! I'm on an old school bus in the tiny mountain hamlet of Stanley, Idaho. The bus is there as part of the town's annual Sawtooth Salmon Festival. My fellow passengers are buzzing with excitement as we get ready to go find some fish.
I'm Tom Stewart. I'll be helping lead this tour to see some Idaho salmon. My excellent assistant here in Salmon Yoda, I call him, is Dave Cannamella.
Salmon are a huge deal in America's Northwest. You've probably seen the images of them hurling themselves out of the water up river rapids. This is exactly where that happens, or at least where it happens for now.
We're going to talk about life cycle. We're going to talk about how the salmon are doing. Feel free to ask your questions, and this ought to be fun.
As our bus rumbles onto a two-lane highway, the jagged Sawtooth Mountains dominate the sky to our right. On our left, the crystal-clear waters of the aptly named Salmon River meander along the road. I find myself sitting next to the Salmon Yoda himself, Dave Cannamella, a retired fisheries biologist who's studied salmon in the region for decades.
Are we likely to see some fish today out there?
Well, we're going to see some reds. Reds, as you know, are nests. The females dig a red, R-E-D-D. That's where she'll deposit the eggs, and then they'll hatch. And those fish spend about a year, year and a half in fresh water, at which time they migrate to the ocean. And if they don't get to the ocean in their own time, in their own way, then they are subject to mortality. And that is the primary cause of the extinction trajectory that Snake River salmon are on right now.
And that's why I'm here. The treasured Chinook and sockeye salmon of the Pacific Northwest are dying out. Both fish are on the U.S. endangered species list, and time is running out to save two of the world's great animal migrations. For this week's Crossing Continents, I'm going to explore the human factors that are driving these iconic species to the brink of extinction. As we step off the bus on the banks of the Salmon River, it's a peaceful scene. The riverbanks are dotted with pine trees, giving way to sagebrush-covered hills. It's late summer, and the water is low and calm. From a safe distance, so as not to disturb them, Dave points to a sockeye salmon hanging in the current.
If you were to go sneak up on the bridge and look down, there's been a sockeye hanging out down there, so you can actually see a red fish.
Oh, okay.
If you see the light-colored gravel, that's actually the nest or the red, R-E-D-D. And that's why, ooh, look at you, girl, digging away.
Arriving here to dig a nest and lay eggs is the final leg of a two-way trip in the life cycle of these salmon. Born high in these mountains, the first part of their journey is in some ways the easiest. They point themselves downstream and gravity takes them out to the Pacific Ocean, sometimes in a matter of days. In the ocean, they eat and grow big before returning home to breed, their final act before dying. As tour leaders Tom and Dave explain, their demise plays a key role in the ecosystem.
These fish, they'll guard these nests as long as they have the strength to do so, and then within a few days, they will die, and they decay really fast. And some people say, well, God, isn't that a shame? And the real answer is no, because these fish are what's called a keystone species in that every phase of their life, they provide food for others. When they die, their bodies decay really quick. They fertilize the watershed, and the watershed is then all prepped for their progeny, their children and grandchildren. So huge ecological impact. It's very cool.
In places where salmon exist, bird diversity is much higher where salmon go than where they don't. You know, we'll see impacts to insect life, and they look at tree growth. If you don't have salmon for things to feed on, you won't have those things. And so, you know, the natural life cycle, it tugs at your heartstrings a little bit, but we are talking about one of the greatest salmon runs in history.
Talk about that intangible part, though. You said it breaks your heart.
Archimedes said, in all things of nature, there's something in the marvelous. And you're standing, you know, 900 miles from the ocean, 6,500 feet above sea level. Some of these fish left here 2 years ago, 4 inches long, and they are back, you know, 35 inches long. It's totally miraculous. It's magical. And we are on an extinction trajectory when we don't have to be.
Most scientists agree the biggest threat to the salmon is a man-made problem, or, more precisely, a man-constructed problem in the form of four massive dams spread out along a roughly 150-mile stretch of the Snake River, blocking the salmon as they try to return home to breed. If the fish were to disappear, it would end a vital connection to the Pacific that dates back millennia. It would also create an equally big cultural void for communities which have relied on these waters and these fish since long before America existed. Further north, near Lapway, Idaho, I meet Joseph Oatman and James Holt on the banks of the wide, calm Clearwater River. Both are members of the Nez Perce, one of several Native American tribes for whom salmon were a key food source for thousands of years. Today, there are no anglers on the river, not enough salmon to open the season right now. That's a big change from decades past. Is this the river that you've fished for your whole life?
It is. Actually, I learned how to fish on this river. I'm often right here at the mouth of the Lapway Creek, along with Joe.
Okay, you guys fish together?
Yeah, we spent a fair amount of time. You know, we both come from families who rely on fish, and I grew up with James and kind of what we do, and we have that sort of a bond and relationship, you know, as people to go places and fish together and bring back the foods to our families.
I think a lot of people might not kind of understand just how important salmon are to not only the Nez Perce, but quite a few tribes for hundreds of miles in this river system. Can you explain why salmon in particular have such significance?
It's an age-old story, that one. You know, it goes back eons now in our oral histories. It was salmon who stepped forward first, said that he would give of himself, and he told Creator how he would give of himself. And so that's why he's so prominent in our ceremonies and the way that we honor our first foods that we are always told to care for and take care of. That's the importance of salmon in our lives. He takes care of us intimately in all ways. And, you know, sometimes it's heartbreaking when there actually is nothing to see.
Historically, you know, we used to see runs of, you know, upwards of 2 million fish. You know, this was a resource that we heavily depended upon. Back then, you know, we had a population size of something like 5,000 people, you know, spread throughout our traditional homeland. And we would catch and consume like 150,000 to maybe a little over 300,000 fish. We no longer have that anymore. So in recent years, you know, our runs have been collapsing. And, you know, the number of fish that we're able to ultimately harvest is pretty low. And so when you think about that in the context of a tribal population size of 3,600, and we're having maybe a total harvest of something 5,000 or less, you know, that's barely a fish per person.
The dams act as giant concrete hurdles for the fish in the middle of their migration. But they're also important economic drivers in this region. And that means the Nez Perce and other tribes trying to save the salmon face powerful vested interests.
So when you think about this, you know, from the tribal perspective, we had this huge change where, you know, our whole fishing economy and livelihood has went from the high it was back in the mid-1800s to where it is today, which is barely anything. And you see sort of the converse on the other side, you know, farmers, irrigators, shippers, all these folks that rely upon this river as it is now with these dams in place. You know, they have it pretty good. You know, they're benefiting off of these rivers and the water. They're benefiting off of the lands, you know, that we had ceded. Well, they came here with nothing. And now, you know, they are reaping the most benefit that this region and these rivers has to offer. And there's a lot of profit, and they don't want to see that lost. But folks don't really understand that the other side of this coin is the tribal people and our resources. And we're the ones who've been really suffering.
For the people of the Nez Perce, protecting salmon is more than just a plea to protect their cultural heritage. The promise to protect fishing rights is written into the 1855 treaty they signed when they ceded their land to the U.S. government. Many tribal members see the decline of salmon as yet another failed promise. For them, it's now or never if the salmon are going to be saved. And in this battle, they found a surprising ally.
Idaho salmon are wonders of nature. Ultramarathoners that make an 1,800-mile round trip from Idaho's highest mountains to the Pacific and back.
This is Mike Simpson, a Republican congressman representing Idaho, one of the reddest states in America. Simpson's party has often been skeptical of environmentalists, seeing wild lands as a resource first and something to be protected second.
Humans have adapted, but unfortunately, the salmon haven't adapted. The dams create barriers to passage that imperil their existence.
In 2020, it's thought that fewer than 1,000 salmon returned from the Pacific Ocean to the Middle Fork of the Salmon River system in Idaho, once prime spawning habitat. That's a fraction of their historic numbers of some 150,000 fish spawning in that area alone. But Congressman Simpson has a plan to save them.
The current system is clearly not working, so we are asking some very difficult what-if questions. What if the dams came out?
Specifically, Mr. Simpson wants to blow up the four dams along the Snake River, a proposal which has been welcomed by local tribes, conservationists, and many scientists. But the plan has been nearly universally rejected by Simpson's own party in Idaho, including the state's governor. And that's to say nothing of the utility interests that make money off hydroelectric power. Doug Johnson is a spokesman for the Bonneville Power Administration. They sell the power produced by 31 dams, including the ones targeted by Simpson's salmon plan.
Those dams provide about 1,000 average megawatts of energy a year. Now that's enough power to keep the city of Seattle lit up. Also, as we continue to feel the impact of climate change worsen, that carbon-free energy from those facilities is going to become much more important.
So if the dams are breached, what does that mean for BPA if you were to lose those four dams?
What's proposed is replacing those dams with wind and solar. You know, the wind certainly doesn't blow all the time, the sun doesn't shine all the time. And I think that that presents added expense for public power in the Northwest.
And higher energy prices for some people?
I really can't say that. I mean, technology is the big X factor in all of this. But as things are today, yes.
Some salmon advocates dispute that point. They say the cost of wind and solar is coming down.
It sounds difficult, but if you start looking at what is possible, there's never been a better time to do this than now.
That's Stephen Hawley, a writer and documentary filmmaker who wrote a book called Recovering a Lost River about dam removal. He thinks dam removal is not only necessary to save salmon, but might actually be good for the power industry.
We have a chance right now where all these sort of powers have converged, and we could update the region's energy grid for the 21st century, add some truly renewable resources, some more solar, create the grid infrastructure to go along with that. And as a kind of ancillary benefit of doing those big infrastructure investments, we would also free up habitat in the Snake River, which once historically produced half of all the Chinook in this system, 1.5 million salmon a year. We may never get back to that, but we could certainly have some fraction of that, which is better than what we have now, which of course is rapidly approaching nothing.
Without dam breaching, I mean, what's the outlook in your mind?
Well, there's a letter signed by, I think, 68 scientists that came out in the last year here that basically said this is the last best hope we have.
The funding to rebuild and rethink the region's energy infrastructure is all part of Congressman Simpson's plan. It's a sprawling $33.5 billion proposal that would make huge investments in alternative renewable energy sources. But it's not just the energy sector which is resisting the removal of the dams. I've come to Lewis Clark Terminal in Lewiston, Idaho. We are 465 miles from the Pacific coast, but because of the dams and their system of locks, barges can navigate all the way to the ocean from here. The port lies about 40 miles from the Lower Granite Dam. If that was to go, as Congressman Simpson has proposed, then so would this port. From here, thousands of tons of wheat and grain from some 3,500 farms from across Idaho, Oregon, and Montana is transported to ports across the U.S.
Do you have any idea where the shipment's going to?
Yeah.
We're going to Alabama.
Showing me around is Scott Zuger, who's from local farming stock, growing up on his family's wheat and cattle ranch. Now, he's Lewis Clark Terminal's general manager. In this current environmental tug of war, he's quick to remind me of the terminal's green credentials.
For all of us that like to, you know, think of doing everything we can for a green planet,
The main things that the river system does is it reduces carbon emissions because of the ability of barges to move mass quantities of grain that if you truck them, the multiples of like 50 and 60 times the emissions, which would be really detrimental to our health and welfare here in the Northwest because that's the air we breathe.
But there's a plan out there that you're familiar with to breach the lower Snake dams. If that were to happen, what would happen to this terminal?
Obviously, it would be a death wish to this company and many others. Farmers and ranchers and small business people all around us would suffer greatly due to the lack of economics of scale from this shipping that I'm talking about here on the river system. Great difficulties would fall on them, especially their bank accounts. These farmers and ranchers, you know, getting those crops to market, a great difficulty as it is with current economics. You add another economic burden and we just see more foreclosures and more consolidations. The family farm is already in jeopardy, and this would just be another straw on the camel's back.
There's obviously a lot of differing opinions on what to do about salmon. Most people seem to agree that salmon are having a problem.
Yes, the issues that are happening with salmon are predominantly an ocean problem because of the extreme filth that's coming out of cities that are very heavily populated, and that's not good for fish. And that needs to continue to be addressed and cleaned up. You know, in all honesty, you can't fix an ocean problem on a river system.
But why do you think there are so many scientists who have come down on the side of dam breaching and saying that that is a key to saving the fish?
I can pretty much attribute that to heavy drug use in the 70s. You knew I was going to say that, right? It's like, yeah.
I'm going to assume that I can take that to mean you do not agree with the findings.
Exactly, because there are significant amount of people that will tell you otherwise. There are significant findings in favor of dams and fish, and so it's just a matter of who gets the press.
Lewiston's mayor, Michael Collins, agrees and says it's hard to know who to believe in this tug of war between environmental and economic interests.
I mean, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of misinformation out there or differing of opinions, which is, I think, especially with something as potentially controversial as this, that you would expect. And obviously with the breaching of the dams, if that is the answer, okay, we're going to have issues here.
You think at this point, at least, that even with that Simpson plan, with all of the money that's in there, that the economic outcome would be pretty bad for Lewiston?
I mean, Lewiston, we depend so much on that river as it is right now when it comes to barging, a lot of our local industries, employment, even tourism is a factor. The boats coming up river for tours. You know, those people coming to Lewiston are important to a lot of our businesses here. At this point, I'm not sure enough questions have been answered. Is it worth it to take a chance if we don't truly know that this is truly the answer? I think it's an awful big risk with human lives as well as fish lives.
Despite pledges from Congressman Simpson to invest in new transport systems and compensate communities affected by the removal of the dams, there are no guarantees here that local lives won't be hit hard. It's complicated. A testament to that is the eye-popping scope of the plan, which includes money for everything from new rail infrastructure to renewable battery storage to city parks. Equally complicated is the science. So let's take a minute to break down the factors working against the salmon. These ocean problems port manager Scott Zuger talks about, no one disputes that. Rising sea temperatures and pollution out there are hurting salmon, and removing dams won't help that. But there's also scientific consensus that without breaching the dams, the fish are doomed. Though at least one prominent study funded by dam interests disagrees. So how do dams hurt salmon? Okay, so the fact that the fish have to overcome a giant concrete wall, that's an obvious problem. In turn, fish get slowed down by the dams, making them easier prey for predators. Sea lions are known to swim hundreds of miles inland to feast on the fish. One of the biggest issues is rising river temperatures. Water gets backed up behind the dams in huge reservoirs and begins to heat up. If it gets too warm, the salmon can't survive. And all of these things are happening here. That rush of water you hear is millions of gallons of the Snake River rushing through a spillway in the Lower Granite Dam in eastern Washington. The dam operators know the effect they're having on the fish and have retrofitted several dams with fish-saving devices.
You know what our motto is here?
What is your motto here?
No fish left behind.
For fish heading to the Pacific, a kind of water slide snakes above and beyond the dam, allowing the fish to sidestep the dam itself. And for fish heading upstream to breed, there's also a fish ladder. but it's really more like a waterlogged concrete staircase that offers fish an alternate route to avoid going through the dam. All these efforts have cost taxpayers several billion dollars over the past 40 years. Rob Lustig is the operations manager here at Lower Granite Dam, working for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which maintains many of the country's dams. He says the essential salmon recovery work carried out at the dam to restore the fish population is necessary not because of the dams, but is tied to a time when locals had no interest in saving the fish.
We talk a lot about the sockeye salmon, that all the different agencies were all working together trying to improve the sockeye salmon runs. And people don't realize that back in the 50s, it was a different mentality for fish management and mitigation. The managers at that time decided they didn't want the sockeye salmon. It wasn't a good game fish for sport fishing. And when they spawn and die out on the banks of the lakes, then, you know, there would be the smell and that kind of stuff. And the general public didn't like that. So back in the 50s, they euthanized the lakes. Did that for several years, trying to eradicate those runs. So now the Corps, we're spending a lot of time, a lot of energy with the other agencies, all trying to restore things that were done well before the dams were ever put in.
Today, Rob says salmon traveling through his dam have a 98% survival rate, though what's important is that the total number of fish passing through is still well below historic numbers. This decline is something of a recent trend, he says, and Rob and his colleague Paul Auker say this may be more of a natural phenomenon than a man-made problem.
By the time I started my career in the early 2000s, there's been a steady incline of fish runs for years and years and years. Last couple years, there has been a slight dip. We haven't changed our operations, you know, to make that happen. But unfortunately, the last couple years, they have been decreasing. And that's what all the agencies are trying to figure out why that is.
You know, a lot of the arguments that we hear are that these fish cannot recover with the dams in place in the river. However, if you look at the history going back from 1975 all the way up to 2015, we have increasing runs based on the actions that the Corps and other agencies have taken. However, with the big dip we've had recently, there's renewed interest in saying that the dams are the key reason why fish are not surviving. However, how could they be going up during all that time with the dams in place if that was the only causative factor? That's a big question for us.
There's a robust debate, right? And there's some people who don't think that dams and salmon can coexist. Why do you think that people have such strong feelings about that?
Well, whether it's religion or politics or salmon recovery, I think a lot of people get really rooted into their personal beliefs and what they believe. I think one of the things that's a little sad is that depending on, you know, who you talk to, they're taking the same data and they might be looking at it a different way and saying that the dams do need to come out. And other scientists might say, hey, this data shows the dams can stay in. For me, I work for the Corps of Engineers, and whatever Congress asks us to do, that's what the Corps is going to go through and do. The Corps asks us to build these dams, operate these dams over the years, and if Congress asks us to take them out, then that's what we'll do.
Back at the Sawtooth Salmon Festival, a crowd of about 100 conservationists, river and fishing guides enjoy local country music legend Muzzy Braun. There's a giant inflatable salmon at the festival entrance, and booths are set up with information about salmon recovery and dam breaching. Also in attendance is the man behind the controversial plan to blow up the dams, Republican Congressman Mike Simpson, who's convinced he's going to get his way.
I don't think you should allow a species to go extinct if you can save them, and if what's causing them to go extinct is the actions that you've taken in the past. Everything we do on the Snake River, on the Lower Snake River, can be done differently if we choose to do it differently. It's a choice we make. Salmon don't have that option. They need a river, and right now they don't have a river. Unfortunately, I haven't had anyone come up and say, well, let's just let them go extinct, even though I know that there are some people that would just as soon see that happen, and then this issue would be over. But most people that say, I want to save salmon as much as anybody, that are opposed to dam removal are really saying, I'd like to recover salmon as much as anybody as long as I don't have to change what I'm doing. And the reality is we have to change what we're doing. And it's going to happen, but will it be under a design that we plan our future and how we're going to address it, or will it be because a judge imposes it on us? And so I think we're smart enough to figure this out.
I see. So what you're saying is you think if your plan or a plan like it doesn't go through, then as salmon get closer to the brink, that we might get it dictated to us by federal courts.
Absolutely. You know, the Endangered Species Act is probably the king of the road. Most judges look at that, and understandably so, as the ultimate law, because if a species goes extinct, it's gone forever. You don't get it back. Only God can recreate a species. So they take that very seriously in trying to prevent a species from going extinct.
What about
His own fellow Republicans, many of whom he's worked with for decades, have been the most outspoken opponents of his dam-breaching plan. Simpson faces re-election in 2022 and already has at least one primary challenger.
It was like kicking a hornet's nest, but it's a hornet's nest that needed to be kicked. And I've talked to an awful lot of people who are anti-dam removal, but they will tell you privately oftentimes, yeah, I know the dams are coming out eventually, but, you know, that doesn't mean I like it. And that's the kind of thing we're dealing with. Change is difficult. Change for anybody. And it's trying to get people to think about the future instead of what we have right now. Think about what do we want the Pacific Northwest to look like in 25, 50 years from now. Because the decisions we make now are what's going to make that determination. And I've been told by some of my best friends that I need to find an off-ramp because I can't get reelected if I pursue this. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm not looking for an off-ramp on this. I'm trying to get this done one way or another.
What makes salmon recovery such a difficult issue is that it deals with three complex ecosystems: the river ecosystem, the economic ecosystem, and the political ecosystem of the American Northwest. Without the salmon, the river starts dying. Without the dams, riverside communities have to rethink their economies. And asking communities to make hard choices, it's not the easiest sell for local politicians looking to win re-election. It's telling that even prominent Democrats in dam country, seemingly natural allies for Simpson's plan, have mostly taken a wait-and-see approach. Many Native Americans, who've been connected to the fish longer than any other Americans, want to see more urgency. Devin Boyer, chairman of Idaho's Shoshone Bannock Tribes, says if we wait too long for action, it won't just be the salmon that disappear.
Everything's connected. And if one thing goes, the rest will. The way that the rivers live is because they're the blood of this earth. And everything in it protects it. Everything in it keeps it alive, keeps it going. And if you lose one thing, the rest of it will go. Our people, the Ogaidika, we're named after the salmon because that's what we grow from, that's what we protect, that's what we live by. In the time before man can speak, the fish spoke, and they traded with us so that we could protect them and speak for them when that time came, and that time is now.
What would it mean to lose salmon?
What would it mean to lose salmon? We would be non-existent. You can't live off of something that's taken out of that blood, meaning the rivers of the earth. We would cease to exist. It would be the first beginning of the end.
Do you think most people kind of understand how close to extinction these fish are, kind of how on the brink they are?
No, I don't believe there's been enough education on the issue. I don't believe there's been enough people that have even heard of it. And without that education, without that ability to understand, things will get worse. Things will go away. If you don't try to save what we refer to as the finned ones, it's just like losing an element, because you can't remanufacture that. You can't grow it. You have to treat it good. You have to take care of it so that you can live.
We're joined now by Heath Druzan to talk a bit more about the documentary he produced on Idaho's salmon for the BBC. Thanks for being here, Heath.
Great to be here, Tom.
So, you know, several of those you interviewed in the documentary addressed aspects of this, but what would you say to the big question? Why are salmon so vital to the American Northwest?
Well, I mean, you know, if you drive around our region and all the way out to the Pacific and Washington and Oregon, I mean, you'll see the effect of salmon on businesses. You know, you'll see that sort of that imagery, that iconography. You just kind of see salmon everywhere. And that goes back well before America even existed. You know, there's such a vital part of the history of this region. And for a lot of people, you know, they've been literally the lifeblood of their cultures. And, you know, even people will, you know, our audience will know Stanley, Idaho well, and they've probably been to Redfish Lake. Well, Redfish Lake is named after the redfish, the salmon that used to, at least, fill that lake and kind of give it its, you know, its kind of character. So salmon have not only been a food source, but I think that just people sort of, they equate salmon with the spirit of this whole region.
So there's that cultural aspect, business aspect. As you said, there's a food source. What other effects, excuse me, the expression downriver, do salmon have on the ecosystem?
So that's part of what's so fascinating about this, and something that I really learned a lot about during this documentary. You know, salmon basically bring the ocean to the mountains. So a lot of these rivers are kind of sterile in their natural state, I guess I would say, without salmon. And the salmon are bringing a lot of nutrients from the ocean in the vessel of their decaying bodies, because they'll breed and then they'll die, and then as they're decomposing, all of these minerals and nutrients that are in their bodies are getting released into the water and actually going all the way out into the forest. I mean, even studies showing that trees and bears and birds benefit from having salmon in that ecosystem. So they really sort of replenish the river, and then through the river they replenish the forest and the soil. So they're, as scientists say, they're a keystone species. They're really vital to a lot of different parts of the ecosystem.
You've spoken in the documentary with people on both sides of this issue. So in addition to hydropower, what's the impact of dams past the rivers?
So the impact of dams is fairly complex. There's sort of that obvious blockage, right? There's a big wall that stops salmon and other fish. But what's also happening is that you've got the water warming in a lot of these rivers, and we actually saw that this year. We saw some real alarm bells go off because rivers around Idaho and even beyond Idaho were getting so warm that it was killing fish. So salmon can only take so much heat. They're cold water fish. And what happens is the water backs up behind these dams, and it's able to heat up more than it would if it was free flowing. So once it gets to a certain point, salmon just can't survive. And then there's also just sort of another maybe more obvious one, where when salmon get kind of slowed down, they're easier prey for eagles, ospreys, even sea lions that swim hundreds of miles upriver.
We're speaking with Idaho-based journalist Heath Trusen about the new documentary he produced with our partners at the BBC. So I appreciate, Heath, in the documentary when you say it's the science is equally complicated. Let's switch to the political. Mike Simpson, you have him on tape. He says it's not just a choice, but also the reality that we need to do things differently on the Salmon River. How would you explain his plan or his approach?
I would explain his approach as a lot of things, and I think that's part of the hard sell there. You know, as I mentioned in the documentary, $33.5 billion, and it's so much more than a conservation plan. He's basically trying to make communities whole that might be adversely affected by taking out these dams, and certainly there will be communities that are hurt. They rely on the barging system, where these barges are taking grain from all the way in Lewiston, Idaho, 465 miles from the ocean, to ports all over the world. So that would all go away, and he's got so many different things in the plan that they range from obviously breaching the dams to even kind of building up parks and like open space and rethinking some of these communities like Lewiston, how they make money, rethinking maybe their tourism economies as opposed to their ag economies. So it's very wide ranging. And, you know, I think for some people that's a plus, but it also makes it a little bit difficult to explain to people.
So it's an ambitious plan, but legislatively, you've got this powerful congressman behind dam removals. Why isn't it happening?
Right. And theoretically, he's exactly the right guy, because you've got a Republican. You've got a Republican who's pushing an issue that theoretically Democrats would be on board with. It hasn't been that easy for him, though. Prominent Democrats in Washington, they haven't said no, but they've taken a wait and see approach. And I think one of the things that Simpson's running into is some political realities where when you take a bill to Congress and you're not the party in power, even if it's a bill that the other party might otherwise like, if it's not their bill, you know, it's a harder sell. Maybe that shouldn't be the reality, but I think politicians want ownership of a bill like this. So he's got kind of a dual uphill battle with the party that, you know, opposes his party and his own party that has been, I would say, cool at best to his proposal.
Really interesting hearing him talk about the plan and his, you know, future political prospects. This really fascinating piece of tape. So in Idaho, of course, we feel super connected, interested in this story. But what grabbed the attention of the, you know, worldwide BBC?
You know, this is one of the world's great migrations. And that's why they were interested. I think a lot of people don't realize that salmon swim about 900 miles from the ocean and up, most importantly, up 6,600 feet all the way to a lot of different places, but Stanley, Idaho, Redfish Lake, that area. So they're going up rapids against the river, and it's just this brutal, difficult journey full of predators and hazards. And I think people around the world, when they hear that this great migration is under serious threat of extinction, you know, it's something that even everybody involved in this, no matter what they think about dam breaching, they all want to save the salmon. They just can't quite agree on what we should do.
Mm. Simpson also said that, you know, no one's against the salmon. So Heath, in the time remaining, it was interesting the note you ended on. Tell us about the concerns that you found of Native American tribes.
You know, I think that Native Americans in Idaho and neighboring states really have the most at stake here because this is such a deep cultural issue. These tribes, long before America, these tribes were relying on the salmon for food. And also, they see them as sacred. They see them as a life-giving force. And losing the salmon, you know, it's been described to me as really losing kind of part of their identity, part of their culture. And there's a real worry that without the salmon, that they're going to lose a vital piece of their culture that they can never get back. And beyond that, it's a legal issue. You know, there's a treaty. There's a treaty in 1855 where the Nez Perce ceded land and fishing rights were guaranteed for them. So they also feel like there's a kind of yet another betrayal of promises made by the U.S. government if the salmon do go away.
Well, it's always great talking with you, Heath, and I know we'll connect on some of your future projects in the months ahead. We've been speaking with Heath Drusen about the new documentary on Idaho salmon that was produced by our partners at the BBC. Up next, a report from the Mountain West News Bureau. I'm Tom Michael, and you're in tune with Idaho Matters.